Hey, this is Dr. Jenna Bice with Heal at Home Moms. This is the podcast where we discuss all things motherhood and postpartum issues, but also just all things pelvic floor, basically the things that I tackle in my job that I think that all moms around the world should get to know. And that's what we talk about here. So let's take a listen.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very sleepy. How about you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Today we are having the subject Breaking Down Pain with Sex with Dr. Jill Kraft. I am so excited to have her. And she is an OBGYN who specializes in female sexual medicine and vulvovaginal pain conditions. So basically her job is super specialized and extremely important. And there are not many of you, are there?
No, there aren't. I'm one of few in the country.
Well, I am so glad that you are good at what you do. We need more people who are good at this because I know there are so many women out there with pelvic pain and they really don't have a lot of good options or resources because it's not that widely understood, you know?
Absolutely. This is true. And so I'm hoping that just spreading some of the word on what causes some of the pain and some of the first step things that we can do about it, it's really important.
Well, I mean, it's a super, super needed area. I know that we've already talked about the fact that, I mean, I know people, I mean, all over, for instance, in the Southeast where I am, where I'm like, you need to call her, do a telehealth. You need to, you know, because it is so rare to find someone so good at like lichen sclerosis, right? Like you said, people are so often not diagnosed for so long. And then once they're diagnosed, people don't really know what to do with them necessarily. So you do telehealth and you do, of course, in person, right? Combination?
It's true. We've started doing telehealth since COVID out of sheer need because, you know, some of our patients, they can't travel or they don't feel comfortable traveling. And so, and a lot of the restrictions on medical license and where you can practice has really relaxed in COVID. We'll have to see how that works going forward. Right now, we're doing it on a case-by-case basis, depending on restrictions and the current situation. But it's really opened up a lot of a resource for patients, especially women who are in Europe, actually. I've seen a number of women who can't obviously travel across the ocean to come see me right now. So that's been great. And I've really been able to reach out to a lot of women on social media, which is actually something new for me. I just started my Instagram about a little less than a year ago now. So yeah. I'm relatively new to it from an education standpoint, but it's been super rewarding.
Oh, absolutely. And you've done a great job, by the way. I love your posts and they're full of good information. Well, yeah. So, and also thank you for your husband's service, by the way, and your family's dedication.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
So I want to go ahead and dive into pelvic pain. And so, but specifically pain with sex. So we're wanting to kind of talk about if women are experiencing pain with sex. First of all, I guess one of the questions I always ask them is this new or has it always been this way? Is that something that you tend to ask as well?
Absolutely. So there's a few things that are super important when you're talking about pain with sex. And first of all, the first thing to realize is that it's very common. Up to 22% of women report pain with sex in their lifetime. And that's from the World Health Organization right there. Wow. So we know that this happens. It's just something that women don't tend to talk about because it's a sensitive subject. And sometimes it goes away on its own and then sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So there are a number of reasons for painful sex. And the way that I like to break it down is by system, if you will, because I think that is the easiest way to understand things. I actually taught medical students for 8 years in academics before I joined a private practice. And so when it comes to educating patients, I like to educate them as I educate my medical students because I think they deserve that. And so,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm thinking about reasons, I break it down into big categories. So we think nerve, we think muscle, we think tissue, the actual skin. We think hormone. So when you break it down that way, it's really much easier to understand. And so as far as the most common reasons for painless sex, I would say hormone is the most common reason. For example, women who go through menopause who have decreased estrogen and they have decreased testosterone, because women have testosterone too. Mm-hmm. And that affects the tissue, especially the tissue at the entrance of the vagina. And that's very, very important to know. So when we're talking about pain with sex, it's really important to know locations. Mm. That's really going to give you the cause. It's going to reveal the cause to you. And I think what most women don't realize is that the vulva is very, very important. It's more important than the vagina when we're talking about sex, both pleasure and pain. So the vulva is the center for female sexual pleasure, meaning the clitoris. Mm-hmm. And it's also the most common place for female sexual pain, usually pain with insertion. So I always educate my patients and women on Instagram about what's called the vestibule. The vestibule is the area inside the labia minora or inside the small lips, and it houses the glands that produce lubrication when we become aroused, so that wetness. It also houses the urethra, which is the tube where urine exits the body. And so there's a lot of the really important structures in that entrance to the vagina area called the vestibule. It's also the insertion point for the pelvic floor muscles coming in that form a sling that hold all of our organs up in our pelvis. And so this is the area that I concentrate on when I do an exam. And so when I'm talking about tissue and when I'm talking about hormones, I'm talking about how hormones affect that small little area of tissue at the entrance to the vagina. It's about the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah, it's like very small and very important, right?
Yes, very small, very important. And so when we're breaking this up into big categories, we can talk about that tissue as far as hormones. We can talk about the muscles that attach to the base of that area and how they can affect sexual pain as far as burning and different symptoms that women have. We can talk about nerve endings. So some women are born with too many nerve endings in that small area of tissue there. And for those women, these are women that have never been able to insert a tampon or perhaps have never been able to have intercourse because the pain is too great, because they basically feel that area much more. They're more sensitized than other women. And when I do, sometimes there is a role for surgery. It's, you know, a last step, very directed approach. But when I do surgery on women who are born with too many nerve endings, and that's the cause of their pain, we actually stain for nerve endings, and we find that they have 1,000 times more nerve endings than control women or normal tissue.
Interesting. Yeah. And so, like you said, some of those severe cases might require surgery to help fix that, right? But then also, if someone has always had pain with sex, so say that's happened from the very beginning, what do you tend to recommend as treatment options for someone like that?
Well, there's so many treatment options, and they range from physical therapy to topical medications to oral medications to even surgical options. Again, surgery is a very, very small part of what I do. I would say, you know, maybe 5% of what I do. So there's usually other ways that you can address the pain. So in order to look at treatment, you really need to know the cause. The big problem is that many women they'll go to their doctors and they'll get a diagnosis of vulvodynia. Vulvodynia is really not a diagnosis. It literally translates to an abnormal pain response of the vulva. So it just tells you where the pain is located. Now, we can be a little more specific and we can call it something called vestibulodynia, which is when the pain is localized to that vestibule area, but that's still not a diagnosis. It tells us where the pain is, which is valuable, but it doesn't tell us the reason why you're having the pain. And so
that is such an interesting point, because I can tell you, even as a physical therapist, I would say 80 to 90% of the referrals I get for pain patients, it is just pelvic pain or they use the medical, right, like word. So, I mean, I'm just saying that, like, I know as a physical therapist, most of the people are not receiving that cause diagnosis.
It's true. And that diagnosis is extraordinarily important because if you don't have a cause or a true directed diagnosis, then you're basically throwing treatments and you're seeing what sticks on the wall. And that's why a lot of these combination topicals that have a anti-muscle spasm medication and a nerve calming medication and a hormone in them. And it's just, you know, it's a combination of everything.
They're trying to do like a one size fits all kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's just not the way, that's not the best way in my mind to approach it. I really want to get to the cause of the pain and then direct treatment because my treatment is going to be more successful if I'm able to establish the cause. So just for example, one of the most common causes that I see is hormonal. And so I see this in women who've gone through menopause, whose ovaries aren't producing as much estrogen and thereby not producing as much testosterone. And so then they have thinness and dryness of the tissue. It affects the glands where the lubrication usually comes out. And so that they have pain because of that cause. And so what's the treatment? Obviously to restore hormone locally to that area, and then they get better. What a lot of women don't know, though, is that you can have the same exact process go on in women who are younger due to certain medications that basically mimic the same processes of menopause. So, for example, there's a certain percentage of women who start birth control pills, young women, who develop side effect from that where it really affects their glands that produce lubrication and the tissue of the vestibule, that entrance area to the vagina. And for that small percentage of women that are really affected by decreasing the estrogen and decreasing the, especially the testosterone in that area, they develop symptoms. And so the treatment for them is to really look at other birth control methods that aren't going to be as disruptive and then restore local hormone to that area to resolve the symptoms.
So things can function. Yeah.
So they can function. Exactly.
So, you know, of course, that the way that I first learned about you was listening to a webinar that you did with My Pelvic Floor Muscles with Janice about hormones and birth control, which I thought was awesome. So anyone wanting to check that out can find that probably through your page or My Pelvic Floor Muscles, right?
Yes, they can go to My Pelvic Floor Muscles and it's listed in her educational content.
So it is wonderful. And that really hit home for me because while I have not experienced pelvic pain, I know we've talked before about the fact that getting on birth control at a young age, definitely the other thing people don't talk about is how birth control can affect libido, right? Yeah. And just change all of that. And that was not a fun experience. And so, but listening to how some people are more affected by those things than others. And so I think so often we write off, well, so-and-so just doesn't enjoy sex or life's busy or, you know, whatever the thing is, but it's like there could be hormonal reasons behind some of these changes in your desires and finding someone who can work through
that
with you.
It's so true. And I see many women with this. This is what I do day in and day out. And it's so interesting to me. In my intake questionnaire, we ask women, what do you think is causing your symptoms? And it's my favorite question. It's the last question of the questionnaire. And it's so revealing because I have some women who really pinpoint it and they're like, I really think it's this. And then I have some women who, you know, think it's everything else, you know, and then you really direct it back and you're like, but could it be your birth control pills? And so I think birth control pills, first of all, is something that women don't always even think of as a medication. And so I think that that's an important component because it truly is a medication. It's an oral medication that you take that affects your body, and it actually affects your body in quite a number of ways. Hormones, by definition, are substances that create a reaction somewhere else in the body. And so when you're taking a pill that affects, that goes through your bloodstream, there's going to be effects in different areas. And a couple of the ways that birth control pills can affect libido and can affect the health of the vagina and the vulva are that they, when they're metabolized or when they're broken down by the liver, they produce a component called sex hormone binding globulin. And this is a protein that basically circulates in our blood. But the important thing about it is it attaches to our natural testosterone and it makes it inactive. And so by definition, birth control pills are what we call anti-androgenic, or they are against testosterone. And for some things, this is great. It's great for acne. It decreases the oiliness of our face. It can decrease hair growth.
Some pluses. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely pluses. But, you know, these effects are not going to be in isolation. And so some of the downsides are some of the sexual side effects that really people don't talk about. And we think, I've actually done a bit of research on this, and we know that women who develop sexual pain on birth control pills, they likely have weaker testosterone receptors. And so that is why they're so affected by this medication.
Yeah, that's so fascinating, because I know that at a young age, I mean, and like I said, mine wasn't so much pain, but basically I was having these negative side effects from birth control. And even when I got off of birth control, I remember feeling like these effects lingered for, I mean, a good year at least. And I remember being told that was impossible. Like, no, it comes out of your system in 3 months. That's not possible. Hormones. And I was like, I'm telling you, there's something still going on, you know? And I know that you had mentioned that you guys have seen that it's totally possible for some of those long-term effects.
Absolutely. We do hormonal testing in our practice in women where it's going to make a decision or if they're on a certain medication. And so we find that sex hormone binding globulin does stay elevated. And it really varies from individual to individual in how fast it's going to go down. But there are women where it stays elevated for years. And so it's important to know. And this may not be in the research, but it's definitely something that I see clinically. So I don't think it's true that birth control pills go out of your system in 3 months or whatever that may mean. I think that there are some effects that do linger for longer. And it's really not in your head, you know? I mean, yeah. We can see this on lab results. We can see this from a tissue standpoint. These are real effects. And just because science doesn't recognize it or the research hasn't caught up with it yet, doesn't mean that women aren't really experiencing these symptoms.
Yeah. And just realizing that, you know, everyone's different, right? There's not one cookie cutter. Like, I think that often these generalizations are made because they do often fit most people, you know, but realizing that it's okay if you're someone at home listening to this and you're like, well, I've been told something about my pain or even my libido or whatever it might be, realizing that not everyone is the same and you may fit a different category than the norm, and that's okay. So hopefully that can be empowering, because I know that for me, it's so strange, but what it took for me getting off birth control was actually getting pregnant and having a baby. That reset my hormone system. At least that's how it felt, you know?
I hear that quite often. And I think that, you know, the other big important point is that a majority of women do great on birth control pills.
Yes, absolutely.
A majority do. And it's been an excellent medication and an excellent option. It's allowed women to achieve what they want in their lives and their careers and make choices for themselves. And I think that's super, super, super important. I don't want to discount the benefits of birth control in general.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think that for that small percentage of women that do have side effects from it, sexual side effects in particular, we need to believe them. And we need to know that there are treatment options out there. And that may mean that birth control pills are not the best birth control option for these women if they want to continue birth control. And so I think that needs to go into the counseling process when we prescribe birth control. And then it needs to be on the radar of providers who see patients who are basically hearing these symptoms. You know, they should not be disregarded. So I think that's where I feel strongly about it is, you know, I'm not anti birth control pills. Yeah. I just want an awareness around them that there can be sexual side effects and that we need to recognize that and we need to provide treatment for these women and not just disregard their symptoms.
Yeah. And like you were talking about with tissue. And so I kind of want to jump back just a little bit with one little statement. We were talking about earlier, like the vulva, the vestibule, and the vagina. And I think it's important that most women just think vagina, right? Like they think it's the whole thing. And so we, of course, can't show images through our podcast, but, you know, look it up and see, hear what we're talking about, how those are different sections of your body. And then as Jill is talking about how, you know, your tissue can be involved, I always recommend get comfortable with looking at that part of your body and knowing what it looks like, right? So that when things change in color or just almost like dry or plump, right? Whatever the term you want to use is, but those can be signs of hormone changes. And so I think it's good for most women just never look, especially in the South. We're like, what? But I think that especially if you're having pain, it's a really good thing to get comfortable with and to learn what your body looks like so that you know where to go with that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a few thoughts on this. I mean, the first one is that really, we only look when there's a problem. I mean, isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Like, we really only look when something is wrong. And so we don't really know what our baseline is. We don't know what normal is for us. And so, especially with my patients with lichen sclerosis, which is a skin condition of the mm-hmm. vulva, which is the outside area, that causes quite a bit of changes to the way that things look. And I have so many women say to me, I really never looked before. I wish I would have looked sooner. I would have realized that something was not right. And I think that the generations that are coming up right now, I can see a difference with how they view this. I think that they are more likely to be very open about looking and about their sexual function. I think that knowing your anatomy is the first step to really embracing yourself as a sexual being. You have to know what works for you before you can communicate that to a partner. And I think a lot of women don't get to that step because they feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it really starts with exploring yourself. You can't expect a partner to know exactly what to do unless you know yourself, how your body works and what you feel comfortable with.
Yeah. And when we say look, we literally mean get a mirror. I joke, I mean, you do want to be careful with like photos in the cloud but a good old fashioned mirror and get comfortable looking and knowing what that looks like. And especially, like you said, it's so good. If we could start getting people comfortable with a baseline, then they would know if there's changes associated with decreased interest or pain, you know, all those different things. So if someone comes to you with pelvic pain, like you said, you might look at medication, hormones, possibly physical therapy. Of course, that's my field where we look at all sorts of things as well within PT. But do you ever recommend, I mean, as far as like dilators or things like that, or is that more in the PT wheelhouse?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yes. So dilators certainly have a role. It really goes back to the cause, mm-hmm. you know, because if you have, for example, if your pain is hormone related, you probably won't, a dilator is probably not going to help you.
Yeah.
But if your pain is related to pelvic floor tightness, then a dilator may have a role. So a dilator is a tool that we use as a part of the process. And it definitely plays a role. I work hand in hand with physical therapists, and because patients really can't see me every week or twice a week, you know, my physical therapists, a colleagues as coaches in that arena, I usually defer to them and say, awesome. You know, yeah. Don't, I'm not going to tell you which dilator to get. I want you to visit with the physical therapist that you have a consultation with, see what they feel comfortable with, because I feel that any coach has tools that they prefer. And so I like that to be done in that way.
Yeah. So if it's more muscle related. So a lot of patients are like, I don't know what it is, right? But so basically that's why they need to see a specialist like you so that they can figure it out, you know? So when would you say if someone has pelvic pain, say either it's chronic or it's new, when should a woman seek out a specialist?
So what I generally recommend is if you've tried first step approaches to your pain and it's not working, or it feels like your doctor has tried the same thing over and over and over again, and you're really not getting relief of symptoms, then this would be a reason to see a specialist. I mean, this can apply to any area of medicine, but for some reason, maybe because there's just not many specialists in this area or people just don't really know about it, women will tend to see doctor after doctor after doctor. Just for an example, I mean, women yeah. tend to see up to 7 providers before they come to my doorstep. And so they've tried many different things. And I think that the difference that I provide is, number one, I take the time to actually listen to what's going on. So I spend over 20 minutes just having them tell me their story. I have a big intake mm-hmm. questionnaire that I review prior to their visit. I spend time really thinking about what's going on even before they see me. And then we spend a good 20 minutes on their exam. It's a very focused exam, very thorough exam, because I'm often their last stop. And then we spend a lot of time on talking about diagnosis, explaining why the diagnosis causes their symptoms. And then we go through their treatment plan. And I'm very explicit with the treatment plan. I find that that's another problem, is that women are prescribed medication and they're not told how to use that medication. And so, of course, you know, if that happens, they're either guessing or they may be using it in the wrong way. And then they think that it doesn't work, even if it's the right medication for them.
Yes.
And so I think that, you know, just being able to have the time and the dedication, I view that as a form of respect for the patient. And it's one of the reasons that I was a general OBGYN for 8 years, seeing upwards of 30 patients a day. I know what that feels like. And it's not that your OBGYN is uncaring or uneducated. It's just the system that
so busy.
That we work in. Yeah, it's the system that we work in because of decreased reimbursement with insurance, medical insurance model. And so, you know, and the other thing is that your general OBGYN probably doesn't see these conditions day in and day out like I do.
Mm-hmm.
I see more lichen sclerosis than most people. And so when you see it day in and day out, you see, you know, you've had the experience of things not working and you try something else, or you've had the, you know, you've had all of these experiences that you get really, really good at what you do.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when you know, as a general OBGYN, you're really good at taking care of pregnant women, and you're really good at, you know, making sure that everything with the annual exam is covered, and you're really good at dealing with irregular bleeding and periods and birth control, and really good at a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I think that when things get to a certain point where you're not getting relief with the common treatment options, then really that's where a specialist comes in.
Yes. And I know I was so fortunate. It's been so interesting because my OBGYN does check for diastasis, prolapse, pelvic floor strength, pain, like all these things that so many doctors don't. And then she also does a lot of, at least in Chattanooga, a lot of deeper pain conditions compared to what a lot of OBGYNs do. But I've kind of been spoiled, basically, that she does all that, because it's good to remember that most don't. And like you said, it means they can still be really good at their job. They don't dive into pelvic pain that much.
Exactly. And I think the hard part is, it's just, we don't know how to find these people. Like, every doctor,
do you guys have a search engine thing where we could like type in like vulvodynia specialist and find a list of providers? Does anything like that exist?
I do have some resources that I'll definitely share at the end. But, you know, in general, you know, whether you are a heart doctor or whether you're a lung doctor or whether you're a GYN doctor, you know, really, you know, everybody has things that they've that they're interested in, and they've spent extra time studying, and they've tailored their practice to seeing more of just because they enjoy it. And, you know, it's no different with an obstetrician's gynecologist. You're going to have certain doctors that really love taking care of pregnant women, and that's what they would prefer to do, and that's where their expertise really lies. And then you have people that are really good at taking care of fibroids, or really good at taking care of pelvic pain or endometriosis. And so it's just, in general, it's hard to link up with the right people for patients to link up with the right provider in general. Now, the good news is that there are societies and associations, and they're really getting wise to this. And so they're providing databases. And so for
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is excellent. I mean, that's a step in the right direction. And there's also support groups that are really being spearheaded by patient advocates, especially for lichen sclerosis. And this is super necessary, especially in the time that we live in where, you know, everything is really available at your fingertips through the internet. We really need a way to connect the right patient who has the symptoms to the right physician that's going to give them the best care.
That makes me so happy. Yeah, that's one mm-hmm. of the pluses of social media right now. And right, is people are becoming more aware of options and asking good questions, and that's helping guide them to people like you faster, hopefully, is the goal, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I call myself, so when it came to describing what I did in a very short amount of words, you know, I came up with this idea of, well, I'm a vulvar pain specialist. And is there such thing as a vulvar pain specialist? I don't know, but that's what I do.
Hey, yes.
That's what I do. And so that's what I'm going to say that I am, because it's what I do. So
that's helpful.
Really need to, yes, it's helpful. And so we really need to really differentiate these things so women can find the right provider. You know, there it's now in OBGYN, we have, you know, endometriosis is another one of these examples. Yes. Where in the past people didn't really understand it. They didn't really know much about it. Women were suffering. They were being misdiagnosed. So now we're having gynecologists who are endometriosis specialists. And that's really what they're tailoring their practice to. It's what they do. Now, for infertility, that really came out early. I mean, that was decades ago where that came out, and they really created their own area. So mm-hmm. now there's fellowships in it and so forth. And I think for sexual medicine, for what I do, that will come, and it's already starting to come, awesome. But it's really at the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the future, we're really going to, at least I'm hoping in my lifetime, it's not going to be a struggle to say, I'm having sexual pain. I need to go see a vulvar pain specialist. And that will actually be a thing. And you can go get the treatment that you need.
Yes. Yay. I 100%. Well, Jill, thank you for spreading the word. Thank you for teaching us stuff and for being on social media and spreading knowledge and awareness for all of the women that need it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today. And we will be sure to share all of the links and notes at the bottom of the podcast. So check that out if you guys have any questions. And be sure to follow Jill at Jill Craft MD. I'll put the link, of course. She has some great content, so check it out. Thank you for listening to Heal at Home Moms. I'm Dr. Jenna Bice. If you need any further help, you are welcome to find us on healathomemoms.com. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and I also offer telehealth for those of you far away who need some one-on-one consultation and in-person concierge mobile physical therapy. So if you are in the Chattanooga, Tennessee area and you are looking to heal, I am here for you.